The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on February 5, 2012. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning. The last time I spoke here on a Sunday morning, I was talking about not holding beliefs. And in some of the Q&A afterward, I felt that maybe there were still a few things that I hadn't made clear. So I want to start in with that a little bit, just talk about belief a little bit. And then I want to relate that to Buddha Dharma, or the teaching of the awakened, which goes by the misnomer Buddhism. But it's really Buddha Dharma. Well, there is Buddhism, but that's something else again. But what the awakened teach, I might say a little bit about that in relation to this matter of belief. What is belief exactly? Say if we say that some apples are red. Is that a belief? Or there's little green men on Mars. Is that a belief? Are either of these beliefs? What would you say?
Both are.
You believe there's little green men on Mars? No, these are just statements. They could be beliefs. If you believe there's little green men on Mars, well, then that's a belief, and you believe it. If you believe that some apples are red, well, that's a belief. But what is it that makes this a belief? One person responded that, well, if you believe this, well, then that's a belief. And if you believe that, well, then that's a belief. Well, yes, of course. That's also a tautology. It doesn't really get us anywhere. What is it that makes it a belief? What makes it a belief, a simple statement, or even a complicated one, but what makes it a belief is that you think it is true. If you believe some apples are red, you think that that is true. Some apples are red. If you believe there's little green men on Mars, well, then you think that statement is true, that there are little green men on Mars. Has nothing to do with whether or not it is true. Believing something doesn't make it true, contrary to what some of us might think. You say, well, it's true for me, but yeah, it's true for you, but it doesn't make it true. And Buddha Dharma, what it is that the awakened teach, is it's not about believing. Because whatever we believe, there was that quote I gave of Bertrand Russell. I said, I quoted it as, would you fight for your beliefs? The real question was, would you fight to the death for your beliefs? He said, of course not. I might be wrong. This is the nature of belief. It is very unstable in that way. But belief is about thinking that such and such is true. And that is not what our concern is here. Buddha Dharma is about realizing, waking up to the truth. And it is not something that you can grasp, that you can take hold of. Now, the Buddha, he likened his teaching to a raft. A raft is something that would be helpful for us under certain circumstances. We're on this shore, we want to get to the other shore, we're on the other side of a river, say, a raft would be helpful. It's just that it's something that we can use that will help us in the end. It isn't the objective itself. And any teaching that deals with truth, that acts as another image the Buddha used, as a finger pointing at the moon. He likened his teaching to something like that. It is something very helpful that we can use to point something out. But there's nothing in the teaching itself that is there for you to grasp or to believe or to hold up and think that this is right and true, that this is the truth. We get into trouble when we have teachings like this, where people think that this teaching is right, this teaching is true, you should believe it. But if we're thinking along these lines, that means that we are grasping. We are holding to some idea about what is right and true and real. But everything that we grasp is dubious. Nagarjuna referred to this as deception. Anything that is conceptualized in some way where we can get hold of it with the mind or even with the hand, it's dubious. Well, take for example, some apples are red. Maybe that doesn't seem so dubious. And so you believe it. Some apples are red. Yes, but what do we mean? I mean, you carve open the apple, look at the flesh inside, the mass of the apple. What is it? It's kind of a whitish yellow, maybe, a whitish green. Oh, yeah, I've seen some that are kind of pinkish inside. But is the apple red? Well, you say, well, no, I mean just the skin. Yeah, just that pencil-thin layer on the surface there is red. Well, what about in dim light? Is it red? Or in the dark? Is it red? Or in a green light, is it red? Is this redness really a quality that belongs to the apple? When we say that the apple is red, or the apple skin is red, does it belong to that in some way, to the apple, as a quality of the apple? Because under some conditions it doesn't appear to be that way. And what is it that we're seeing there anyway? Are we really seeing the apple or the redness of the apple? What is that redness anyway? Well, under certain conditions, light falls on the apple's skin and these photons hitting the electrons in the skin of the apple, and these electrons get excited and they send out other photons to our eye. Now, they're scattered all over the place, but a lot of them enter our eye. And we see that as red, we'd say. Red. Well, then, well, so where is this redness? Is it in our eye? Is it in the light waves? Light waves really aren't anything at all, actually. It's just that photon when it hits the retina excites the eye in a particular way that somehow we seem to see red. Well, how is it that we even see red? So where is this redness? Well, the point I want to make here is that this claim that some apples are red, if we start to investigate this, if we really want to get down to what's actually going on here, what's really being experienced, the moment we take hold of any explanation at all and form it into something, the time before last when I spoke here, my talk was that whatever is formed is illusory. Whatever is formed in the mind like this, as Nagarjuna said, this is deception. Be careful. You might be deceived. Being deceived is thinking that the way you've packaged it here now, the way it's been conceptualized in your mind, is true. And if we think it's true, then that becomes a belief. It's something that we think is true. But the awakened point out that all of this is dubious. All of it. You can't grasp reality. You can't get hold of it in any way whatsoever. So why hold on to particular beliefs about things? they might be useful. You ask me to go to the store and get red apples. Don't get the green ones, get the red ones. Yeah, okay, I know what you mean, and it's very useful. It's not to say that the apples aren't really red. That's all silly. We don't need to go there. But we also don't need to go to the other extreme, thinking that apples are red. Well, some apples are red anyway. We just don't have to go there at all. But in our constructed world, our conceptualized world, that's very functional and useful. So I'm not discarding any of this. We're throwing it away. We can't really anyway. But we don't need to be deceived. We don't need to latch on to certain things thinking that this holds the truth for me. Well, because first of all, there's you. Wants to hang on to this truth. And right there, we have a dubious situation. And an unstable one, and a one that is ripe for suffering and confusion. So all teaching, even the teaching of the awakened, is dubious. This is why the Buddha likened his teaching to a raft. He didn't say, here, this is the truth, this is what you should believe or think. No, this is a way of teaching that I'm just pointing some things out here to help you to notice what actual experience is. And actual experience is, never mind the details, actual experience is that you can't get hold of it. That's what you need to realize about it. That's all you need to realize about it if you're concerned with waking up. You can do different things with it and use it in various ways, and this is all perfectly fine. But we get confused and start to think that the way that we're thinking about it, the way that we've conceived it in our minds, is the truth. And it's not the truth. It cannot be the truth. So Nagarjuna calls this deception. Suzuki Roshi says that when my talk is over, your listening is over. No need to grasp it, to hold it, to take it with you, to remember what I said. This is why we have teachings like this. Now, I've taught this in many ways. I've used the example of the Dharma. Buddha Dharma is such that if you're writing it up on a chalkboard with the right hand, the left hand is coming along with the eraser and taking it off. So we don't attach to it. So we don't get hold of it in some way. Or thinking that this teaching is, that's something that needs to be grasped. I have talked about some teachings as being dangerous. I'm not the only one. Wang Po speaks of certain teachings as harmful and not at all the way to supreme knowledge. Well, what kind of teachings are those? Well, these are Buddhist teachings that Wang Po is concerned with, but really any teachings at all. The ones that are harmful, when I speak of a teaching as being harmful or dangerous, what I mean is some teachings are a little bit more sticky than others. And the stickier a teaching gets, the more dangerous it is. I don't mean to say that these are bad teachings necessarily. There are some wonderful sticky teachings. And there are some teachings that are not quite as sticky. You know you can't grasp these. You can't get hold of them at all. They don't stick to you at all. And you can't. Of course, we don't really like those kinds of teachings because we want to be able to grasp them. So we have a strong tendency to go toward the kinds of teachings that we can easily grasp and hold. And then, of course, very easy to get confused, thinking, aha, this is it. This is the right way here. Gotten hold of something here. And this is dangerous. Wang Po says this is harmful and not at all the way to supreme knowledge. But some of these teachings are really wonderful. It isn't that we can discard them. Like, for example, the Vimalakirti Sutra. I took a group of you, maybe a few of you. Well, Mary Sullivan was there. You were there, I think. OK. Cal, I think you might have come. We were doing the Vimalakirti Sutra. It lasted over 3 years when we went through that in a study group. Pretty sticky teaching there. It's a wonderful teaching, however. There's great teaching in the Vimalakirti Sutra. But I don't know if I would just encourage you to go ahead and just start reading it, because it's pretty sticky. You can start to grasp a lot of imagery in there and get carried away with that. And so if you don't have some reminding going on while we're doing this that, don't get hold of this, and you have showing ways in which you really can't get hold of what's actually being pointed out here, well, then we can use the teaching like this. But it's dangerous. You better be careful with these teachings. Some teachings are just pure goo. They're just maple syrup, I don't know. They're just sticky through and through, and there's really nothing there. And that I would just, we can call that candy. And I would just stay away from that altogether. A lot of our teachings are like that. Or the aspects of the teaching, like the aspects of the Vimalakirti Sutra, that you really can't get a hold of. But it's layered with these fantastic stories where you can easily get hold of various things. But what's really being pointed out there, you can't get hold of it. You can see it, however. You can learn to see it. You can wake up to it and realize what's being pointed out. And what's being pointed out has everything to do with your actual experience. Like the actual experience of seeing an apple and realizing that the question of whether or not it's red is a flat earth question. Has nothing to do with it. It appears red. If you can talk about red apples, fine, let it go. But to actually think that, does that even mean anything? That the apple is red. We can learn to not have to operate in this way. This is something quite subtle, and it takes some discipline, and we have to really attend to this and come back to this. And then with this, and maybe with this kind of help, because I certainly needed help in studying these kinds of teachings, we can start to see the subtlety of what's in there. But because words are being used and images are being used, a fair amount of stickiness there. Some teachings are less sticky, like, for example, either the Diamond Sutra or the Heart Sutra. The Diamond Sutra, though, is a little funny. It's actually two sutras in the Diamond Sutra. And the second one begins right in the middle of a chapter. Seamlessly. All of a sudden we're in a different sutra. And there's some stickiness there. But maybe less sticky than the Vimalakirti. But then you get to the Heart Sutra. Not very sticky at all. Though a little bit. Just the fact that we're using words is sticky. Just as I'm talking now, there's some stickiness. Because I'm using words, I'm resorting to concepts. Because otherwise I would just sit here and say nothing, and then what's the point? So we're always in the midst of this kind of dangerous situation here. But we have to mature within our own mind and heart and to recognize when we are getting hold of something, we are making something out of something here. We are identifying with it. We're forming self. We're relying on. This is deception. This is harmful. This is dangerous. And we need to, it may be helpful for us to have this pointed out at least, but we need to learn how to recognize this ourselves. Not just in these teachings here, but throughout life. You hear the advertisement on the TV or the political argument or this or that. It's endless. It's all around us. And we're easily caught. We're easily swayed. Our emotions are appealed to. All of this. And constantly tossed about. Don't we want to get down to the real thing? We want to wake up to the truth, do we not? Isn't that our interest here? And if it is, you have to understand that you can't get hold of it. You can wake up to it. You can wake up to truth, reality. And the reason you can is because you're experiencing it now. It's just here, just this. But we think and we grasp and we conceptualize and we talk to ourselves. And we emote and we grasp that and we'll make something of that and we'll think about that. In a limited way, this is perfectly fine. But we have to understand what's deception about it. What is harmful and not at all the way to supreme knowledge, if our interest is in waking up to reality, to truth. Okay, so these are some things that I want to say. Yeah, and then getting back to this matter then of Buddha Dharma. So the teaching of the awakened is just like this. It is just that. It is not something you can get hold of. There's a lot of stuff in Buddhism that's, you know, loaded with graspables. You know, rituals and outfits and ceremonies and one thing or another. That's fine. It's fine, but this stuff is very sticky. We get easily caught up in it and entangled and confused, and we don't even realize we're confused. So I always want to just bring you back to this and to remind you of this. There's no particular way, no particular teaching, really. Buddha Dharma isn't some particular teaching. But it is always this matter of coming back and to realizing your own heart and mind right here in this moment. And just seeing it for what it is. And not to be carried off. Do you have any question about anything I've said this morning? Yes?
It seems we live in a culture where marketing people are spend their whole lives trying to make sticky concepts.
Oh, yeah.
it's refreshing to hear just your teaching saying recognize them as what they are, mm-hmm. not substantial.
Yeah. Yeah, and we don't have to hate them, because we're all caught in that way. We could easily become a marketer ourselves, and probably we are in some small way, you know. So all we need to do is just to wake up to this, to recognize where we are, and to also, most of all, though, to recognize where we are right here within our own heart and mind. That's what we need to do. We're not responsible for others in that regard, but we can wake up. Just wake up to what's happening here. It's not a matter then of judging. This is good or bad or whatever. Things are what they are. It's just a matter of, you know, seeing these things for what they are. The moment you say something, though, characterizing this or that in some particular way, of course, you're caught again. You can't characterize it in some particular way, whatever it is. And if we think that's true, you know, it's dubious. Like my teacher said, whatever you think, that's delusion, he said. So we just have to be careful. Then we think, oh, okay, so he's saying then that's bad. Delusion is bad. He didn't say that. He didn't say delusion is bad. There's nothing bad about delusion. Delusion is part of the fabric of the world here. Can't live without it. Gotta love it. But we don't have to get caught by it. You know? That's the point. We don't have to be caught. Of course, we will be, to a greater or lesser degree. Me too. I mean, we always have to be kind of on guard for this, just to watch, be careful. But that's all we need to do. And you're right. I mean, we are, in our culture today, we're saturated. Of course, we probably always have been, but with our high technology now and all that, it's easy to be just totally bombarded. Anything else? Yes.
Dangerous is a pretty strong word. Can you say more about what you mean by that?
It's not danger like you're in physical harm or something like that, or even that you're going to go totally bonkers. And we're already bonkers enough, but we're all kind of crazy. To the degree that we're grasping, we're crazy. To the degree that we're believing in something, holding to something, thinking it's true, the stuff that we can grasp. We're crazy. We're out of touch with reality, because reality can't be grasped. So I mean, dangerous only in that way, in the sense that if your concern is to wake up to reality, there's plenty of things around that can hook you, that can steer you off, so dangerous in that way. Or harmful. Wang Po speaks of this as harmful, point blank. He just comes right out and says that. But it's harmful, and then he starts listing things like ceremonies and different kinds of teachings and whatever, and practices. But what he means is this harms this possibility that we have to wake up. It's just in regard to that. Perhaps you won't be any worse off. However, in the case of Buddhist teachings, or Buddhist-like teaching that appears to resemble Buddha Dharma, because it's using the language of Buddha Dharma and this sort of thing, now it can become more harmful, more acutely harmful, in the sense of, not that it's any different than any other kind of thing, but it's just that in this case, you feel like you're there. You feel like you're in the vicinity now of the teaching of the awakening. But actually, you're not. It's, and Tsang says, a hair's breadth of difference in heaven and earth are set apart. So it's dangerous in that regard when it comes to this matter of Buddhist teaching. Of course, Buddhism is a misnomer, as I mentioned at the beginning. This is a term that Western people put on it when they started to encounter cultures in which the teachings of the Buddha had spread and was in the culture to some degree. But after all these centuries, there's all kinds of stuff that have built up, and ceremonies, rituals, teachings of various kinds and whatever, and it appeared to be like a religious practice. So they think of this Buddhism then as religion, because we associate religion with something like that, and we associate religion with belief. And in fact, all these kinds of practices do carry a great deal of belief. Terms and statements and ideas there that you can grasp and think are true. But if we get back to the heart of it, you know, what the awakened teach, they never give us anything like that. The Buddha never gave us anything like that. But just pointed out some very stark things, like that we don't find self. You can't grasp self. That if your mind is leaning in some particular way, that this is, you know, the self defined in separation to other, and now attachment is forming there. And this is ignorance, which is linked to suffering. And it is not at all seeing that. Seeing is to break that chain of dependency between ignorance and dukkha. So those are the teachings that are very, very clear, very simple, very clear, very direct, not cluttered with a lot of stuff. But we as human beings, we like to play with things, we like to add things, and we'll make it complicated. As my teachers used to say, reality itself is not complicated, it's very simple. Buddha Dharma is very simple. We're complicated, our minds are complicated. We think, we grasp, we compare and analyze and synthesize and all of this. Make it also very complicated. And then we go looking for the answer or something that will satisfy me in ways like that. Yeah, that's what we'll tend to do. And we've done that with taking ideas along the periphery of Buddha Dharma that seem to be there, that have been used. And the next thing we know, we have something very complicated here. After centuries, it gets filtered into various cultures, takes on a certain kind of look here, another kind of look there. I just want to say, be careful of this. That's all. What it is that we need to wake up to, that we need to be attending to, is something very simple, very plain. There's not a whole lot to it there. In fact, it is nothing you can get hold of. But we can see, you can find the knowledge of that right here in your own heart. You don't have to go looking for it. That's where you'll find it. But we're easily distracted and we're looking out there. Did I see a hand here? Yes.
Thank you for the key. Those moments of awakening get diluted by traffic and other things of daily life that go into the mix. So thank you for saying that you're easily distracted from this core that I want to grasp.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes up.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we have that strong tendency, all of us. So we just have to be aware of that. And just watch that, and then realize when you've activated that, and you know what you're doing with it. And in limited ways, yeah, it's very, very helpful. It's nice to be able to distinguish red apples from green apples. Very functional and useful. Another thing, you know, you have to bear in mind, when we speak, everything sounds dualistic. Here's the good and the bad. I want you to understand, when I'm talking, I don't mean to put things in categories like that. There's this and there's this. This is what it is. That's what it is. Let's take a look at that. That's what it is. There's some confusion here. There's something else. You look over here. I didn't say that confusion is bad. It's confusion. There's suffering involved in that too. We don't have to be confused. You know, and the Buddha said, does this teaching reduce it all down to that? Well, he finally reduced it to one word, but he said, I teach but two things. Dukkha and release from dukkha. You know, pain and suffering, confusion, and release from that. When he asked, can you reduce that further? And he said, awareness. Just awareness. Anything else? Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.